Chapter 16. Darrow. The Den. I stand upon my tower as a hard rain falls. Before me, the steel skin of the Eternal City yawns into the night. Amidst the reaching towers and bloated stadiums and buzzing complexes lie dark pools of shadow where the jackal and the years of war that followed left their mark. Now, with the radiation scrubbed and pulse domes removed, arthropodal construction ships from Sun Industries drift with lazy purpose there, hauling and ferrying workers and metal. Hyperion may be rebuilding itself, but the southern cities were all but destroyed by the Ash Lord's forces under his mad minotaur, Apollonius Auvaliae Wrath, before the latter's capture and imprisonment in Deepgrave. My people do suffer. But Dancer's false peace is not the answer. In my youth, I was consumed with the fever of war. I don't feel that fever now. I only feel the cold weight of duty and the fear of what it will do to my family. A ship glows as it approaches the top of my tower and sets down on the landing pad. A thick-set silver man with a bald pate walks down the ramp. He wears a high-collared white velvet jacket. The eyeball of a gold glints from a ring on his heavy hand. "Quicksilver," I say. "Thank you for coming." He grunts and shakes my hand. His lone companion, a sentinel drone no larger than a child's skull, floats behind him, chrome hull shimmering in the rain. A red eye pulses in its center. I watch it warily.
"I watched the socialists tear off your crown. That was an embarrassing spectacle," he sneers. "Matteo's men tell me they've concluded the debate. The Obsidians abstained. Just sat there. Caraval and the coppers went with the Vox. Your arrest warrant will be issued within the hour. They're voting on the armistice soon." "Then you know what happens next." "History is a wheel, and all mobs are the same, full of small men with big appetites. Only way they grow is by eating men like us."
He squints at me.
"You could end the Vox Populi tonight. Storm the Senate. Put them in irons."
"They're still my people," I say defensively.
"Do they know that?"
I don't answer.
"The Vox Populi are a cancer. There's only one way to deal with cancer. Cut it out. I told your wife that years ago."
"We agreed to democracy."
"Yet you're here, aren't you?"
he asks with a laugh. I haven't missed the hypocrisy.
"Change isn't made by mobs that envy, but by men who dare. Fitchner knew that, and so do we, even if they spit on us."
I look down at the bald man, remembering the first time we met on Phobos, how much I hated him. He's a strange creature, full of malice and selfishness and rigid ideology. Not a man I thought I'd ever trust. But he pulled himself up from obscurity on sheer will. He founded the Sons of Ares with Fitchner. He rebuilt the Republic from my wars. Without him, Luna would be a land of craters and ash.
"You're leaving, aren't you?"
"Good," he says.
"Good? What help is the Reaper in a cage?" he asks,
nodding up to the sky.
"We need you in the wild."
I didn't ask his advice, but it reinforces my conviction all the same. He was Fitchner's friend. I wish I could talk to the man now, just once. Would he agree with what I plan?
"I need your help." "You know I always help my friends. Probably why I keep so few of them. You might want to hear what it is first. You'll never make it to your ships in orbit with the Wardens after you, he guesses. You need one of mine.
I need the Nessus. He flinches. And I need it to look as if it's been stolen.
Why the Nessus? What are you planning?
He grunts at my silence.
Never mind. I'll put it in dry dock for repairs. You know where it is.
I nod. Thraxa is already waiting on the dock.
So you knew I'd say yes?
I hoped. He laughs.
Bring my ship back in one piece, eh? She's Mateo's favourite.
Sir, a concerned voice says behind me.
I turn. My arch-lancer, Alexander Au-Arcos, Lorne's eldest and brightest grandson, stands behind me. He's a smirking prodigy. Bleed thin with long white blonde hair and fair skin. Standing no higher than his breastbone is another of my lancers. My niece, Rona. Kieran's headstrong eldest daughter by his first marriage. 20, with a buzzed head and a flat nose. She's only been a lancer for a year, but is eager to prove herself Alexander's equal.
They duck their heads against the rain as it soaks into their black Pegasus Legion jackets. Alexander eyes the drone behind Quicksilver with disdain, while my niece eyes the man himself.
They're all here, Alexander says.
I look back at Quicksilver. If the Vox find out you helped me, you might be safer on Phobos.
And watch as the mob steals my towers and my companies. I have security teams for a reason. I rebuilt this moon. My fighter's here.
Shame. You'll miss my birthday.
Here's to making the next one.
We shake hands, and he departs.
What you've heard is true, I say.
37 howlers stare at me through the smoke haze from their glowing burner tips. A savage's miscellany of psychopaths and hooligans, my pack is a scattermash of rejects that Servo and I have collected over the past 10 years. After losing 20 on Mercury, our official number is 111. But most have been dispersed throughout the Republic by Servo to carry out my directives. Those who do not have homes on Luna reside within the Den, an ink-black skyscraper I liberated from the ownership of the Shadow Knight.
Holiday nods to me from the back, the last to arrive. She looks like she's been drinking.
Seffi sits to the side with our 10 obsidians. With her senators abstaining from the vote, I wasn't sure she would come.
What are you talking about, boss?
Min-Min, my munitions expert, says through her nose. Her metal legs are up on the table. Sunken red eyes watch me neutrally from her dark face. Her dusty mohawk is flattened to one side, and the haggard lines of her cheek are deep in the low light.
This emergency meeting shit's a bit gritty, don't you think?
Her robotic wolf head ring taps against her beer bottle.
We just got back. What's he talking about?
Victra asks incredulously. Her long arms are crossed over her pregnant stomach, and her jagged hair is pinned back by a clasp. She looks furious.
Do you actually live under a rock, Min-Min? Or just look like it? Oh, slag off, Poshy. I was knee-deep in the mass. Had this righteous obsidian brute sandwiched between me thighs. Have you not looked at the news at all today?
Pebble, one of my oldest companions, asks. Her fleshy cheeks are flushed from her hasty arrival. She and her husband, Clown, were halfway to a Mare Vaporum resort for a vacation with their children when Severo called.
Nah, Min-Min sighs. I'm analog, baby. Last thing I need to bloody damn see is more sensationalists smut about psycho slags on Mars raping and burning. Doesn't do me well.
She smooths her mohawk.
Not at all.
Severo throws his datapad at Min Min so hard she almost takes it in the face. She catches it and turns it over, muttering under her breath. Her eyes grow wide as she sees the headlines.
Bloody hell! What I would like to know is which one of you snitched?
Victra asks.
Yes, please stand up so we can stab you in the spleen, Severo says. Only way Dancer could have been tipped off is one of you chattered about the emissaries. If you talk to a whore, a docker, your bloody damn mother, now's the chance to own it.
No one stands.
I trust everyone in this room, I say, knowing it's what they need to hear, but it's not true.
The leak had to come from someone in this room.
Sephi?
She did not exactly support me.
Is she really so tired of war?
However they found out about the emissaries, it wasn't from one of you. You all know by now of the peace accords that the Ash Lord has requested. The Senate will soon agree to an armistice, a temporary ceasefire to negotiate the terms of a possible peace. I believe this is a ploy of the Ash Lord.
Damn right it is, Severo says.
He knows of our division at home, and is using it to gain time to regroup his forces around Venus.
You all know what I fear by now.
I pull up a hollow map and walk along it, dragging my fingers through the asteroids.
I fear dragons. The Ra are coming. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but one day Romulus will attack.
We must consolidate control over the core before that happens. If we leave the Ash Lord alive, we will be caught between two enemies. We will not win.
They'll never fight together, Victra says. They might hate you, but I know Moonies. Even the hostages Octavia used to keep are born hating the Ash Lord. Never forget, never forgive.
They do not have to fight together, Sephi says. They only have to fight against us.
With the heavy casualties the Obsidians faced on Mercury, I know she doesn't relish that prospect.
Then why didn't her senators vote to support me?
I continue.
The Senate is evidently concerned that I am a liability to the peace process. They've called me a warmonger. As of now, they say I am no longer Arch-Imperator. Soon, I believe, there will be a warrant for my arrest.
Might already be one, Severo mutters under his breath. Dancer's a bastard,
Rona says. When she lived in the hidden city of Tinos, he was like an uncle to her. Her fists clench in anger at the betrayal.
No. Dancer is a good man. He's doing what he thinks is right with the tools he has, I say. It's our turn to do the same.
What are your orders, boss man?
Min Min asks.
You hiccup, and the whole Seventh will storm the Senate and crucify any pixie who looks at you funny.
Damn right, Clown agrees. The Senate is more corrupt than the Syndicate. I say you go in there and dissolve it. Have new, clean elections.
And what?
Pebble asks her husband.
Darrow rules as an autocrat in the meantime. Don't be ridiculous. The Republic's done if that happens.
She looks to me plaintively.
Can't Virginia do anything? Surely she won't let them place a warrant for your arrest.
Of course she can't do anything, Victor replies. Majority rules unless she uses emergency powers. But she does that, and the Vox Populi will cry tyranny and vote for impeachment. You see in the streets lately? The mob will back them, especially if they think they can end the war. No one cares about Venus.
She's the sovereign, Rona says,
which has one-tenth the power it once did. The silly lion helped write the laws that stripped the sovereignty of so much of its power. I told her not to.
Victor sighs.
Idealists never learn.
Holliday stirs uneasily at her place on the wall. You can't really be thinking of violence, Darrow. If you mobilize the Seventh, then the home legions will be ordered against them.
By whom? Victra asks. What general will go against us?
Wolfgar, Holliday says, and he'll be the one coming to arrest you, Darrow.
Patriotic idiot, Min-Min mutters.
She turns to Seffi. Can't you rein him in, big lady? Aren't you their queen or some such? Seffi doesn't even look her way. Her eyes are locked on me.
Please, Victra says. Half the people in this room have their faces on coins. The rest have statues. Whatever army they send against us will become our army. One look at Seffi and Darrow and they'll piss their pants.
Does she not see how Seffi is watching me?
Victra looks up at me with a grand smile.
Darling, I say we all attend the peace talks. Make it a bit of a party. And once that sanctimonious prick dancer is put in a cell, we give the Ash Lord our diplomatic reply and send him the head of Julia Albellona back in a gory damn box, mouth stuffed with grapes. Or her head stripped out and replaced with snake heads. Or dancer's testicles, whichever you find more thematically appropriate. We can vote. 'Tis a democracy, after all.
She smiles at the heads nodding along with her, but more than half in the room look nervously at their hands and each other. They're hesitant to go against the Senate. No one wants a civil war. Holliday gives voice to their dissent.
I've followed you through hell, Darrow. Don't ask me to follow you through this. I believe in the Republic. We have to put our faith in something. If you march in the Forum tomorrow, you can march without me.
Loyalty gone, just like that? Victra asks.
A mercenary, after all.
And I thought you was hard, Holly, Min-Min says. Pah, you're getting peaceful in your menopause.
Shut up, Min-Min, Pebble says. She's right.
That's a load of shit, Severo snaps. If they try...
Enough, I say, seeing Seffi's growing displeasure at the bickering. Holliday is right. Gold fell because they let themselves be consumed by civil war. I won't let our republic fall in the same way. I know how fond we are of escalation. Grins from some of my longest-serving howlers. But not this time. The Seventh stays in their barracks. We're not disbanding the Senate. The peace accords will continue. They'll take months.
So you're... What?
Victra says, looking to Severo, then me, aghast and more than a bit disappointed.
Going to let them arrest you?
No, love, Severo says softly, looking back to me.
Our conversation on the shuttle to the den was short and to the point.
Not quite.
The Ash Lord is no fool, I say. Dancer and the Vox Populi are being played. He wants me to use the Seventh. He wants me to dissolve the Senate and seize power. It would fracture the colours and allow him to pry them away by offering stability.
That's a stretch, Victra says.
I know him. I will not break the Republic, and I will not be a prisoner, which is why I am leaving this moon tonight.
They look to each other in confusion.
The question is, who's coming with me? Severo steps forward to stand at my side, even as the rest of them look at me blankly. He did not agree with my plan initially. He wanted to stay on Mars and dare the Senate to arrest me at the center of the 7th Legion barracks.
To where?
Holliday asks.
You're running?
Victra almost spits. I'm not running. But if I tell you... Then you are party to conspiracy, I say. Not to mention the plan's details will leak like word of the emissaries. I look at each of them, wondering again who betrayed me. You will be outlaws. Some of you have doubts about this. That I understand. You followed me to Luna, to Mars, Earth, and Mercury. I will not pressure you now to compromise your oath to the Republic. We are family. We will survive this. But if you think your duty is here, it is time for us to part. Vale willing, we will see one another again soon.
For a moment, no one moves. Then Holliday walks around the table to stand in front of me, her face racked with guilt.
I followed you everywhere, but I can't abandon the Republic.
I'm not abandoning it, I say.
I know you believe that, sir, but I'll remain behind. You may not think you're starting a civil war, but there will be hell to pay. My sovereign will have need of me.
I feel no anger toward her, despite the accusation in her voice. We shake hands. Watch over my family.
With my last breath, sir.
She thrusts her fist into the air in the rising salute.
Hail Libertas!
And in a smaller voice,
Hail Reaper!
She departs the room. Severo sneers at her departure.
Any other cowards?
Seeing the doubt Holliday's departure has brought into the room, Colloway Z. Char, my best pilot, sighs and lights a burner. His slender body is laconic, his skin a deep ebony, and covered with cerulean astral tattoos. He blows a smoke ring, then stands sleepily into it, brushing his blue-black hair from his eyes.
I didn't eat cockroaches to sit at home while you have all the fun.
The pilots of Warlock Squadron follow him, including Minmin. My lancers, Rona and Alexander, join her, followed by a flood of others. Clown can hold back no longer. He bursts to his feet.
I'll go with, he says.
Darling, you stay with the children.
Like hell,
Pebble says, joining him, though I see the doubt in her eyes. Sephi and the Obsidians are all who remain.
Sephi, are you with me? I ask.
I see her answer before she gives it. Unlike Wulfgar, she doesn't worship at the altar of the Republic. She carries the welfare of her people on her shoulders. When Ragnar died, that was her inheritance. Slowly she stands.
I care nothing for Venus or Mercury, she rumbles. They are not worth obsidian blood. We have carried the rising on our backs. And for what?
Her eyes scorch the room.
For gold to sit on high, for the rest of the colors to hate us, call us monsters, for us to speak and for you to hear nothing?
There are still obsidians left in slavery, I say, though I have seen this coming for some time now.
The obsidians have borne too much.
Golds targeted them in the rain above all others. Your brother's master still lives, I say.
I remember how Ragnar put her hand in mine as he died. I thought the bond would last forever, but I have felt the cracks for years now, as I asked more and more from her people.
The Ashlord made him a slave, kept him in a fighting ring, and made him kill like a dog.
My brother was a living god.
The Obsidians with her nod reverently.
But he is dead, and in the mead halls of Valhalla, singing songs before all Mother Death. On this middle plain, only I speak with him now.
She closes her eyes. Her second eyes, the ones tattooed in blue on her eyelids, stare at me each time she blinks.
And he tells me that my duty is not to Darrow Morningstar, not to my vengeance, but to my people.
The worst part is I don't know if she is right. If Ragnar were here, what would he do? He dreamed of seeing his people free, and now they are. But they throw their sons and daughters into our war. Is that freedom? Have I used them like a gold?
I have.
You dumb yeti, Severo snaps. You think the peace will actually last?
No peace lasts. Even the wind knows. But I am queen.
She looks at me with her black eyes, and as much as I need her, I cannot fault her. I think our spirits are so well matched that she would come with me if she did not carry the burden left to her by her brother. But she does.
If I march with you, Darrow, all obsidians march with you. I will not. It is time others fight their own battles.
Sephi,
Severo says desperately, his voice strained, knowing how much weaker we will be without them.
Please.
I'm sorry, half-man. I have spoken.
She covers her heart.
Darrow, if we do not meet again in this world, I will save a seat for you in the mead hall beside Ragnar and my kin.
We watch them go, knowing the strength they take with them. And for the first time in a decade, the Howlers are without the Queen of the Valkyrie. I feel somehow as if Ragnar's spirit has finally departed, and it leaves me without his protection. When the last has left, and the door has shut, Clown turns to me.
So, boss, are we going to rejoin the fleet?
No, Clown, I say, trying not to let the loss of the obsidian steal my confidence. We're not going to rejoin the fleet. Not going to raise men on Mars. Not going to waste time wrangling with politicians. We're going to Venus to find the Ash Lord and cut off his head. Now, that's what I call diplomacy, Severo says. He laughs maniacally and jumps atop the table, boots shattering a coffee cup.
Who's up for some blood?
He howls hideously, his old mania vibrating through the room. Min Min shoots up from her seat and howls, and soon the room wails with the cacophony of 24 maniacs, pretending we do not feel the hollowness of the howl absent so many of our friends. As Severo rages atop the table, I watch Victra motionless in her seat, her hand on her newest child, watching in horror as her husband pretends he's young again. The doubt creeps in, and I feel so very old.
Chapter 17. Lyria. Debt. The blue sky mocks the dead that lie in the mud. The soldiers and medics that came in the second wave of Republic ships laid the bodies of the dead out in the grass beyond the east wall of the camp. Once those bodies were full of life, but now they're little more than empty husks of skin and bone. The spirits that made them have fled to the Vale of our ancestors. I feel like my spirit has already joined them. A hollowness in my bones as I walk the grass looking for my sister. Here and there survivors weep over the bodies of loved ones. A woman makes animal screams over her dead child as others search for their own. My people are taught that this life is just a road to a place we are all going in the end. A place washed in light and love, where the very air is thick with laughter of lovers meeting again. I can't see that world. I can only smell the burned bodies. I can only see the pale legs smeared with soot, cracking with dried blood. And everywhere flies, fat with blood, they buzz and hover in thick clouds over the dead. I walk alone, having left Liam with the medics, my arm slung up. The shoulder throbs despite the meds they've given me, and the skin tickles at the resflesh bandage holding the wound together. More support ships cut across the midday sky, banking around the columns of thinning black smoke. I found Tyrion, where they shot him. Face down in the mud. Boot prints chewed the ground around him. I couldn't even hold him to my heart one last time. His body was a ruin I could not bear. I sicked up and fled, gathering just enough courage to return to our house to see if my father somehow managed to hide. He did not. I have no parents left. Now I look for my sister in the killing field. With every body I pass, I feel the window of hope closing, knowing there's only so many left. So many steps more till my world falls apart. But I hold on to the stubborn little voice in my head that says, maybe she escaped. I pray before I look at each new face and feel sick as I breathe sighs of relief when it is someone else's mother, someone else's sister, dead on the ground. I'm reaching the end of the last row. She's not there. I don't see the bright blue of her new shoes. 15 bodies left. 10. And then I slow. Heels sinking into the mud. Stomach ravelling into knots. The frantic wingbeat of the flies fills my ears. And I'm swallowed by horror. No! A thin body lies on the ground. Its throat has been hacked through to the spine. Red hair encircles her head in a filthy halo. It's not her. It can't be her. But her children lie beside her. Their pieces twisted like broken toys. And one of her shoes hangs loosely on her foot, covered in mud. The other foot is bare. Her lifeless eyes stare at the sky. Eyes that saw my mother birth me. That used to look down at me with perfect love as we lay in bed together under the covers, whispering of boys and the lives we would have. Eyes that fell in love, that watched four children come from her flesh into the world, made cloudless and empty by some angry young man with a hunk of metal in his hand. I feel the mud on my knees, my hands. I claw at my sister's body. Someone shrieks in the distance like they're on fire. And it's long after the medics pull me away from my dead sister and her dead children. Long after they stick a tranquilizer into my shoulder that I realize the screams are my own. You must avoid any undue exertion, citizen, the yellow is saying. You're lucky to be alive. Keep the wound clean. I'll put your information in the system so the medics at your next stop know to recheck it for infection. I stare through her, watching an iridescent beetle the size of a thumbnail settle on my exposed knee, several inches below where the paper medical smock ends. Its pigment darkens to match my skin. Next stop, I ask, looking up at the medic. She's hard into her 40s. Sulphur eyes peer out from a mess of freckles. A white filtered medical mask covers the rest of her face. Despite the sweat on her brow, she's clean. From a city. Do we disgust her? They're taking you and your nephew to a regional medical centre, she says. You'll be safe there. Safe, I echo. She squeezes my good shoulder, and then Liam's. There was a doctor, I say. Janice. I'm sorry. None of the medical staff survived. She leaves, and I lean back in the bed and look down the row of cots. Hundreds of us are clustered beneath the awnings. My pants and the tattered remnants of my shirt are crumpled in a bag at the end of my bed. Liam adjusts his hold on my hand. He hasn't let go since I woke up. I don't know what to say to him. I'm spared the choice when we're both eclipsed by a shadow. It blocks out the light from the nearby doorway. A man comes through the mosquito netting, drawing the eyes of the doctors, one of whom rushes to him and scoldingly points at some animal that follows him in. The man pushes the animal back out with his foot and then closes the netting. But man isn't the right word. No bloody way. On the riverbank, he looked like a statue. Moving upright, he looks like a god. The gold's thighs are broader than my dad's chest. His hairy hands hang at his sides like giant swollen mallets, and his head is bald and shiny with sweat, and looks made for knocking down doors. Liam hears his footsteps and begins to shake in fear. Are you the one known as Lyria? His voice soothes like the distant rumble of a claw drill. Yes, I manage with a dry tongue. Who are you? His eyes, a dark gold, are small and close together. They glitter in a friendly way as he smiles and pushes himself awkwardly through the cramped confines of the medical tent till he's at my bedside. I am a man who owes you a great debt, little one. Yes, indeed, a great debt. You saved my life. It wasn't just me. Oh, but it was. I spoke to the Reds at the riverbank, and they told me what you did, despite your wounds, how you swam to the depths for a stranger. He kneels. I have many that I love who I will now see again because of you. So I thank you, child, with all my heart. His hands swallow mine. He kisses my knuckles. Who are you? I ask again. He frowns. You do not know me? That's a crime. He's taken aback by my tone. Telemannus, he announces grandly. He leans back, pleased at the recognition in my eyes. I am Cavix Telemannus, Eaglebreaker, Praetor of the Republic. From my side, Liam gasps. The Cavix who slew Tiberius Obelluna and flew with the Reaper to Luna and cut off Atalantia Ugrimus's leg. The gold hadn't noticed Liam, so low is my nephew to the ground, but now he puffs up his chest like a regular hell diver, delighted to have his reputation precede him. I can see this child is very wise. He spares a look at me. Though I was not alone against the Ash Lady, my daughter was with me. Looking down at my little nephew, Cavic slowly realizes that Liam, with his unfocused, foggy eyes, is blind. The change in the gold startles me. His voice softens and he kneels so that he is not so far away from my nephew. And what is your name, young knight? Liam of Logalos Dominus. But I'm not a knight. That is a good name, Liam. It is an old earth name from the British Isles and means warrior, protector. Does it? Liam asks. It does indeed. Your people, the first pioneers, brought more than flesh and blood with them from Earth, he smiles. I knew a man with such a name, and he was very brave. But I fear you are wrong. You are a knight. He puts a hand on Liam's head, startling my nephew. See? Yes, you have a hard head, a fighter's head, just like mine. Do you want to feel my head? I've been told it is the hardest this side of Romulus Aurora. With care, Kavix lowers his head and places Liam's hand upon his great dome. You're a bloody plant! Liam exclaims in shock. His hands reach along Kavix's head to find the end of its dimensions. Liam, mind your tongue. I pray this massive man doesn't take offence, but he just chuckles. I am big enough for most things, Kavix says with a grin. But when I'm not, I call on my friends like your sister here, and we are friends now, little one. He pulls a small silver fox pin from a pouch. He sets it in my palm and closes my hand around it. If ever you want for anything, show this to any Republic soldier or employee, and they will find me. And I and any of my family will do what is in our power to help you. You have my word. My family, I say. What of them? He looks around. Do you want me to fetch them? We need family when we are wounded. It is important. Tell me where they are and I shall bring them to you. They're gone, I manage in a small voice, not having any other words to describe what happened. Their absence does not feel real, but it creeps on me, a dark loneliness. Oh, Kavix knows what I mean. His shoulders sag. Oh, child. I let him take my hand between his own. He leans close enough so I can smell the smoke in his beard and the oil he uses to shape it to a fine point. I am sorry. She said she would protect us, I whisper. Who? The Sovereign. He's silent for a long moment. I know it may be impossible to believe now, when everything is dark and broken. But you will survive this pain, little one. Pain is a memory. You will live, and you will struggle, and you will find joy. And you will remember your family from this breath to your dying days. Because love does not fade. Love is the stars, and its light carries on long after death. I can think of nothing to say. So the gold called away by an assistant leaves me there in the bed, under the crinkled sheets in the small tent, in the middle of a place that never felt like my home. Leaves me there as if his words were a gift. But what the hell use are words? How will they protect us, feed us, give us a future? I will go where the Republic tells me to go, likely another camp. But without my family, this one will be empty of its soul. I don't want that life. I hate this planet. There's nothing holding me here. I suffer enormous guilt for thinking of it like that, but I can't stay here. I'd rather die. I need more for Liam, for me. Liam, stay here, I say, lunging up out of my bed. Where are you going? He asks in fear. His hands reach for me. Just stay, I'll be back. Lyria, no, Liam, I snap. He reels back from me. I sigh out the anger and kneel, taking his face in my hands. I promise I will never abandon you. You're my heart. Be brave, and I'll be back. I pull my pants from the plastic bag and jump into them. My shirt is bloody and in ruins, so I leave the medical smock on. I can't find my shoes, but there's no time. The nurses are moving toward me. I duck out of the mosquito netting before they can block my way. The mud is warm between my toes as I race from the tent without shoes. I sprint fast as I can, past soldiers and medics and mourning reds, till I reach the muddy landing strip where traffic controllers wave orange batons at landing shuttles. They look at me like I'm stark mad. I clip past. No one stops me till I reach the Telemannus shuttle. A brooding black vessel, shiny as the belly of a pit viper, with a dancing red fox on its upright wings. It's as tall as any six trees, stacked end over end. At the top of a ramp, Kavik speaks with another gold and a yellow. Two grey soldiers with the same strange canines on their chest plates block my way to the ship, each a head taller than me. One grabs my wrist, easily pulling me against his chest. "Lord Kavix!" I shout. "Lord Kavix!" He cannot hear me. My voice is too small. The roar of the engine's too loud. The soldiers are pulling me away without effort. I call out till my throat is hoarse. But it's not Lord Telemannus who hears me. It's the animal that sits at his side. It looks like a dog with glossy red fur, but it's nearly as large as Liam and has pointed ears and a narrow snout streaked with white. At the sound of my futile shouts, the animal quirks its head, turns to look my way, and then lopes back down the ramp toward me. Only then does Lord Telemannus turn. He follows his pet down the ramp, confused knights and attendants trailing in his wake. Finally, he sees me. "Off!" he barks to the soldiers. "Hands off the girl!" They release me, and I push off the one who bruised my arm to stumble in front of Kavix. He towers above me, his eyes quizzical beneath tangled eyebrows. I pant for breath and pull my medical scrubs back into place. At full height, I barely reach Kavix's belly. In the tent, he seemed kind and human. Here, before hundreds of eyes, he's untouchable. He pitied me earlier. That is why he stood by my bedside. But what am I to him? They say all colours are equal now, but we all know that's a load of snake shit. "Take me," I stammer. "Up," he thunders. "Speak up. Hard to hear you up here, little one." He chuckles to himself as his pet threads through his legs. There's a watchfulness to the creature, a brain examining me. "Take me with you," I say in an angry voice. He doesn't understand. "With us?" "Yes, with you." "Child, we're not staying on Mars, we're bound for Luna." "Lovely. Then you can get me off this rock." "But this is your home." "Home? It's a grave." Kavix frowns, not knowing what to do. A tall, plain-faced gold in her early 40s, who wears a beautiful cloak the colour of a storm cloud, drifts to the man's side. Beneath the cloak, she wears cloth instead of metal. Her eyes are not as kind as Kavix's, but dreamy and distant. She carries a large data pad with her medical equipment. "What is it, father?" she asks.
"The girl wants to come with Zana. This is the one who saved me."
"Oh, heart." Zana looks pityingly at me. "Father, you know she cannot." "Please," I beg. "It's against the immigration regulations," Zana says. "We can't ignore them."
If you can't take me, at least take Liam. Take my nephew. He deserves to have a chance at life." Again Zana shakes her head before her father can respond. We're bound for Luna. If we take you, everyone will want to come, and the moon is already backlogged for years with refugees. Everyone didn't save your da. Sorry. She looks past me to the refugees at the tents who stand and watch. It's an impossible precedent to set. There is a system in place that the Senate designed. We can't simply go against it because we want to. You will be taken care of. You will be protected. It's to your benefit. Protected, like last time, I snarl. I know I should rein in my temper, but my face is numb with anger. Tears leak out of my eyes. You pulled us up out of the mine. You stuck us in this camp. You said it would be for 6 months, but 2 years later we're still slagged in the mud. 2 years! You abandoned us, gold. I jab a finger up at them. The Sovereign abandoned us, and now my family is dead. My father, my sister, my brother, my niece, my nephews, because you lied. I'm sorry, child, the woman says, but it's a bit more complicated than that. It actually is that fucking simple. The Rising took everything. Now it owes me. The answer is no. She sets a hand on her father's shoulder. Come, father. There's been news from Luna.
What news?
Zana looks back at me. It isn't meant for all ears. Kavix's eyes are apologetic as he turns to say farewell. I shake my head.
Lord Kavix, you said if I ever needed anything, you would do your best to give it. Are you a liar too?
I am sorry, little one. If it were in my power, there are regulations. We must obey them. Stupid Senate. I have friends here. I will tell them to come help you. Have patience.
He kneels and picks a piece of mud from my trousers. Farewell.
He leaves me at the bottom of the ramp. Come, Sophocles. He pats his leg, but the animal does not join his master. He's fixated on me, tail swishing back and forth. Sophocles! The animal plods silently down the ramp to my side. He sniffs the air as if it were heady with a delicious scent, and then he lunges. I yelp, thinking he's going to bite me, but instead he stuck his snout into my pants pocket. Sniffing, he rummages around till he's found what he's looking for. He trots happily back to his master.
What have you got there, my little prince?
Kavix takes two pieces of candy from the animal's mouth, one green, one purple. The large man's eyes go wild and wide as he tastes the purple.
Grape! It is a sign!
He breathes through his white teeth. A sign! Zana turns back to see what's happened. She sighs. Father!
Quiet, sceptical child! Sophocles has given Lyria his blessing.
The big man holds up the candy to his daughter and comes back to me, his hands gesticulating wildly.
There is magic yet left in the world.
He tosses the candy to the animal.
And Sophocles has found it.
Father,
has Luna changed our house so? He asks. Must Sophocles remind us of our Martian honour?
His daughter does not answer.
Apparently. She comes with us because...
An idea finds its way from his huge head down into his eyes. He points at the silver pen on my hospital gown.
Because she is now a valet of House of Telemannus.
A valet? Zana and I ask in unison. Zana sighs. Are you going to make the entire village our employees?
just this one. Sophocles has chosen, and House Telemachus does not leave one of their own behind. He puts a heavy hand on my shoulder. My knees almost buckle under the weight. He doesn't notice. Does that meet your judgment, daughter? Zana smiles, surrendering to her father. I'll add her to the registry. Customs won't like it. Well, then they can suck my beard. Now you sound like a barker, telling me who I can and cannot hire. Uppity Pecksniffian pixies. Kavix waves his hand at his men. Underlings, on your feet! Find her nephew, a little blind knight with a mole on his nose that looks like chocolate. You cannot miss him. Bring him here. He punches his palm with a fist. We depart with haste. I stand in shock, not understanding, even though I heard well enough. But the soldiers are moving past me, following orders, and Zana is going back up the shuttle ramp into her ship, leaving me alone with her father. I can't believe it is actually happening. We are leaving. After he watches his daughter disappear into the shuttle, Kavix kneels so he can look me in the eye. Don't mind Zana. She thinks her duty is to protect everyone from themselves. I didn't have anything in my pockets. Did you put the candy in there? He turns to me with a mischievous smile. Sometimes, little one, it's best if the world think you a little mad. He winks. Inspiring what they'll let you get away with. He extends a hand to me. My fingers wrap only around his index and middle fingers, but he's gentle as a bird despite the calluses. And he pulls me along with him to walk up the ramp into his ship. At the top, before we enter the craft, I stop and look back at the camp. A strange quiet presides. The fires have died. The bodies are being buried. And amidst the tents, at the edge of the landing strip, my nephew's head bounces in the breeze as he's carried to us by a fair-haired obsidian. I feel Kavix's hand settle on my shoulder, and I think of my sister and father and mother and all my family that has lived and died and been swallowed by the ground of this planet. The sadness in me is well without a bottom. But it is right that I leave. Without my family, this place is just mud and memories. I look up at the sky, knowing my brothers and Ava's husband are out there somewhere. Several stars are visible even at the height of day. I wonder if my sister looks at them too from the veil. I know she does. And I know I must live life for the both of us. Thank you, I say to Kavix through the tears. He squeezes my shoulder. The worlds are very big, and you are very small. Do you think you are ready, little one? Yes, I say with a trembling voice. Yes, I am.
Chapter 18. Ephraim. The Duke of Hands. I suffer the splintering headache and telltale nausea of a concussion as I come to. Wish I could say it's a new sensation. There's water trickling nearby, the shuffling of feet and murmur of voices. I'm sitting in a hard chair. Metal binds my wrists at the small of my back. The stink of ammonia is like fire ants in my nostrils. I blink groggily and open my eyes. A table sits before me. Lying in the centre is a silver bone saw. My blood runs cold. Screams echo in memory. Past the table, an insidiously beautiful man with slender legs, alabaster skin, and 80,000 credit designer cheekbones stands amidst a half-completed high-rise. He looks interminably bored. His shark leather boots tap impatiently. His long overcoat, tails falling to his mid-calf, is the colour of a rainy midnight street. His tailored pants are black, and so too is his high-collared silk shirt, held together with an onyx clasp. To top off the dashing absurdity of him, his feathery hair is blown straight up like a lazy pink candle flame. Rose quartz eyes twinkle as he looks out the window into the darkness. Men linger in the shadows of the unfinished high-rise. They wear black leather duster jackets with collars to the ears and tails to the boots. Fleshwear glows softly in eyes and jaws and around bald heads covered with bright tattoos. I feel a deep, nauseating fear in my belly as an obsidian nightmare walks from behind me into my field of vision. He's one of the biggest men I've ever seen, with beetle shell eyes and white hair unbound to his waist. He leans against a concrete support beam in a chrome suit. His face is bloodless. His eight-fingered hands, the size of dinner plates and wormed with blue veins, tipped with immaculate razor-sharp nails. He flicks a package of ammonia inhalants onto the ground. "The thief is awake," he says in a low, intelligent voice. "Thank you, Gorgo," the pink says. He turns his attention from the darkness and approaches, carrying a thin cane with him, twirling it as he goes. The shaft looks like real ivory, but at the sight of the onyx octopus handle, I blanch, swallowing down my fear. He sets the cane on the edge of the table and sighs down into his seat. I grimace. "Well, this is ominous." The pink isn't amused. "We are not acquainted, Mr. Horn, but we are a genus in common." Though he is slender, his words are seductive and heavy. "It's not my first tangle with his sort. Just as obsidians are bred to be killing machines, pinks are made to be fucking machines. Both can be very persuasive. There's levels to them too. Obsidian have their stained, pinks have their roses, just as rare, about as expensive." I swallow dryly, watching the pink trace his nails over the tabletop. Idly, I wonder what gold he used to be a sex pet for. I'd ask, but the little flesh monkeys don't like that very much at all. "We are both thieves," he says, "but there are two subspecies of thieves in this world. The first thinks anything that can be taken should be taken. This thief believes in anarchy. The second subspecies is one who believes that not everything should be stolen, that some things must be sacred. This thief believes in order. My question, then, is which subspecies are you, Mr. Horn?" "I'm afraid you've got your wires crossed," I say, stretching my neck. "I'm not a thief. I'm an insurance investigator." "No, that is what you were, but I wasn't asking that. Look, I know we all look like Ephraim T. Horn," he interrupts softly and without breaking eye contact. "Born 707 PCE at Cornuv Hospital in Evanstar, Hyperion. Current residence at 777 16B Salt Place, Upper West Promenade, Level 17. Known associates, Volger Fjorgan, Sira C. Lamenis, and Dano Sunshine? I told him it was a shitty name, but it was between that and Starfall. No one laughs. Tough crowd. But this isn't some street shakedown. They've got resources and money. My name's not much of a secret, but knowing my address, that information costs more than a couple of drinks at a dark dive. And knowing my birthplace, only one damn soul on Luna knows where I was born. And Holiday wouldn't touch these people through decontamination gloves. Only way they'd know is if they had my old Legion records. That's some deep data. I look back at the octopus cane. The pink watches me for a dreadful moment, and I remember a rumour I once heard in the Rising that during the Battle of Luna, some of the platoons used pinks as human lie detectors in the fields when they couldn't get their hands on tech. Makes sense. They're all about the subtle shades. Yeah, you've got my name right. Golden Laurel to you, I say. But I'm no thief. Disappointing, the pink murmurs. Very disappointing. He looks back down at the bone saw. It tires the mind, these Telerian games. All these street pretenders weaving their webs, forgetting they are the flies, not the spider. Since you evidently cannot answer a complex question, I will ask a simple one. Mr. Horn, where is my sword? A knot forms in my throat. They're going to melt the flesh off my bones. Your sword? I frown. Sorry, citizen. I'm more of a gunman. Unless you were talking euphemistically about your cock, in which case it might be in that one's mouth. I jerk my head to the one he called Gorgo. The monster's black eyes haven't left my face. He looks like he swallowed more than mead and roast beef in his time. The pink bursts out laughing. His men do not. They glance at Gorgo in dead silence. What do you think of him, Gorgo? Gorgo smiles, revealing a mouth full of gold-plated teeth. Humor seems to be his survival mechanism, my lord. Under the current circumstances, it may indicate suicidal tendencies. Shall I punish him? Perhaps later, the pink says. For now, I am enthralled. Mr. Horn, the pink coos in a softer tone, you delight me. It's been too long since someone took a chance at making me laugh. Good. Comedy is always such a risk. He wets his lower lip with his tongue, a slow, intentional motion that might be for my benefit, or simply a learned sexual methodology taught to him in the garden of his youth. Do you know who I am? Give me a hint. His lips curl back from his teeth. Ave Regina, he says hoarsely in Latin. As the syllables vibrate from his lips, a ghostly Byzantine tattoo crown appears on the skin of his forehead in ink that moves almost like the tentacles of an octopus sprouting spiked thorns. The centerpiece of the crown is a black hand. Do you know who I am now? Yes, as the voice-activated ink begins to fade till his skin is clear and pale porcelain again. Yeah, I say numbly. Then say my name, Mr. Horn. He raises an eyebrow. Will you make me tell you twice? You're the Duke of Hans. How clever you are. He leans back in his chair. And do you know why they call me that? I've heard rumours. I eye the bonesaw. Excellent. Gorgo here is of the conviction that we should hurt you to loosen your tongue. It always comes to savagery these days. More efficient. But now that the territory wars are behind our little underworld, I was hopeful that you would be cultured enough for a civil conversation. You've an interesting definition of civil. It's all relative. So, since now you know who I am, and all attendant threats are implied, it is safe enough to assume we will be honest with one another. Suppose there's a first time for everything? Good, he says. Good. That makes it simpler. He claps his hands together and stands. You were here during the Battle of Luna, yes? All 3 years, fighting for the Rising. For part of it. Change of heart. No, I just saw enough body parts separated from their owners. I don't feel like going into the politics of it like I did with Holiday. Then you would have witnessed the rape of Hyperion? Liberation, you mean? Made you fellows rich? He stares at me till I clear my throat. All right. Rape of Hyperion is much slicker sounding. He continues. After the Sovereign died, but before the Ash Lord's counter-attack to relieve the Marooned Legions and Peerless, Hyperion lay black. During that time, the Hyperion Museum of Antiquities was looted by soldiers who had promised to protect it, by citizens who thought only of their own pockets. As the moon steeled itself against the next wave of war, those Cretans absconded with the combined heritage of man, a heritage shared by all colours. As you know, all commerce that flows through the black markets of Luna is my province, my domain, as given to me by my queen. When I discovered a trove of stolen treasures being hawked by ex-legionnaire baboons, I looked at it as my duty as a citizen of Luna that they be returned to their rightful place. Now I find that the crown jewel of my donation, the sword of Selenius, has been stolen. Again, our ears told us that it was a very particular sort of heist, one that only a few freelancers would be capable of executing. Well, there's not many of us left, I say. You're dressing them all up in dusters and giving them juicy contracts to steal for you. Out of chaos, us, thieves of order, he says, and traces his finger along the table in one elegant movement. It reminds me of the time I took Trig ice skating. He didn't move with the elegance of this man's finger, and that was what I loved about him. There's no honesty in elegance, not in the elegance of humans at least. When you took my sword from the museum, did you know from whom you were stealing? The Duke asks. I did not. Lying, Gorgo says. Convince me, the Duke says. I don't know where to begin. Would you be more eloquent with a grenade in your mouth? I have some on board. He nods back to the yacht idling on the landing pad beyond the construction floor. Do I look like an idiot? I ask. If I'd known, I'd have walked away. Shit, I'd have shot the man who asked me to do it. There's a difference between bold and stupid. I know which side this falls on. Do you? The Duke asks. Your reputation says otherwise. It reads as if you have a death wish. That again. I roll my eyes and feel a stabbing pain behind them. 4 of your heists in broad daylight, nearly always public spectacles. I work for middlemen, arbiters. Occasionally they leave out details about the job. In this case, important details like whose protection the sword was under. I lean forward, selling hard because my life depends upon him buying what I'm selling. I don't rat, and I don't play with the syndicate. Man has to have a code. Any moment now I expect to feel a carbon hard wire around my neck, or the nip of one of those Martian pit vipers syndicate thorns love to import just for play. The last thing I'll see is this pretty jumped-up ganglord reclining in his chair like he's king of the universe, when he used to be little more than a sex toy. All this new money expects everyone else to have a short memory. Wish I did. But the wire doesn't come. Neither does the bite. In the gardens, they teach us body empathy as well as the art of shadow dancing. A proportional mimicking of body language to make the subject at ease, the Duke says. It facilitates emotional bonding. It makes me ghastly good at sniffing out liars. He seems to disdain his schooling, but he leans back till he's a shadow version of me. Shoulders slouched, legs out, perfect replica. You, my dear, have a dishonest face, so it's easy to tell when you're telling the truth. So you believe me? I do. I hesitate. Then I can go? What a pleasant world that would be. Although you were ignorant in your crime against me, it was, as you know, also a crime against the Queen herself. So I am afraid you don't just walk away from this. He smiles sympathetically. I'm the sort of man who would let you go if it was just between us. I see how frightened I've made you. To be honest, that's often punishment enough. But I fear this isn't just between us any longer. Others know. The Duke of Hans has been made into a fool. I can't have that. He leans across the table, a vein pulsing in his temple. Can't have that at all. In words of old Stoneside, mercy emboldens evil men. You and I have the misfortune of floating amongst a sea of evil men. A debt is owed. A debt must be paid. I can't even think of anything to say. The ramifications of his words cause a spike of fear to go straight into my chest. They're going to hurt me badly. Please don't fret. It won't be anything inequitable. If you'd crossed the Duke of Legs, you'd be wobbling around on those grafted metal prosthetics the rest of your life. And if you insulted the Duke of Tongues, you would be gibbering like one of those lost city black teeth. He is much crueler than the last one. But I'll only take your least favorite hand. He smiles as Gorgo slips forward. Promise. Now comes the garrote. A thin wire looped around my throat from behind by Gorgo. Not enough to break the skin or trachea, but enough to let me know they will if they need to. It immobilizes me. Which hand will it be? The Duke asks. You owe me a debt. Choose. I rear back against the garrote, but Gorgo's fingers are the size of potatoes. Choose. Sense abandons me. My mouth is dry, my body shaking. The left, I manage as they ease off the wire. The Duke nods to his thugs and they grab my left arm. I stare in horror as he picks up his bone saw and turns it on. The razor-sharp saw teeth vibrate. Sheer panic grips me now. The memory of flesh peeled from muscle, how the fat separates from bone and the screams of friends. I watched once, and all I thought was, thank Jove it isn't happening to me. The guilt returns. The sound of my friends shouting to each other in a bombed-out Endymion building, don't rat! Don't rat! The fear and sight to come of metal teeth gnawing through my body, the grisly butcher shop look of naked muscle. I search frantically for something to haggle with, but there's nothing I have that he wants. I feel a desperate, pitiful sob building in my chest that I don't let out. The Duke lowers the bone saw toward my wrist. The teeth buzz like insect wings. I grit my teeth and close my eyes. There is a way to keep this hand, he whispers. Tell me where the sword is. I don't know. I sold it to my broker already. Tell me his name. I can't. Why not? I told you. I don't rat, I said coldly. The way it comes out of my mouth soothes me. I'm less afraid because I have a reason now to let them take the hand, a conviction. Forgot what that felt like. I could carve through your ribs. He twirls the bone saw. Take your manhood, carve off your toes, turn your eyes to jelly. You'd tell me then, if I really wanted to find your broker. He's going to do it now. Gorgo's cologne fills my nostrils. Tell me who he is. I glare up at the Duke. Get to it, asshole. He stares down at me, then laughs. Gorgo, I believe you owe me a diamond. He turns off the bone saw. The garrote around my neck disappears. I look up to see the obsidian shuffle forward, rummage through an alligator skin billfold, and pull out a teardrop diamond that he sets in the Duke's hand. The Duke slips the diamond into his pocket and smiles down at me as the obsidian eases away. I've been tearing Luna apart for someone like you, Mr. Horn, a man with a code. What? The adrenaline floods out of my body, leaving me as limp as empty clothes. What you talking about? Oslo said you were bright. Odd, a white prone to exaggeration. I blink dumbly. I didn't say his name. You know Oslo? I ask. Do I know Oslo? Your broker has often served as an intermediary between the Ophian Guild and the Syndicate. If you had betrayed him, well, that would have been the end of Ephraim T. Horn. But instead, treasure awaits. You see, the Master of Thieves. He touches his black jacket where his heart allegedly beats. Happens to be in need of a thief of chaos. And who better than one recommended by Mr. Oslo and tested by me? There is something of particular significance I would like to acquire. This, my dear Grey, was the final part of your audition. And congratulations, you passed with flying colors. I blink up at the madman. The sword. You had me steal the sword from you. As an answer, a gleaming smile splits the man's face. I sit there, my body shivering from the adrenaline leaving the system, still not entirely sure he's not going to snatch my hand and saw it off. "You're a special kind of asshole," I mutter. "You've clearly never met the other royals." He touches his chest in offence. "I'm the tender one." "The syndicate has enough thieves," I say. "Why do you need me?" "Are there any as good as you?" he asks, attempting flattery. "Three, at least. The Figment, Zendrick." I shake my head, wishing I had taken holiday up on the job offer. "I told you, citizen, I don't mess with the syndicate. You boys play too hard. Whatever job you want me to do, use your men." I glance at his thorns and Gorgo in particular. "I don't wear a collar." "We all wear collars," the Duke says, tapping his forehead where the invisible crown lies dormant. "Some are more comfortable than others. And now it's your turn, Mr. Horn." He pulls something from his pocket and sets it on the table. "They call it the Queen's Kiss, a black iron rose that can bribe watchmen, open doors, and intimidate even senators of the Republic. It is the warrant of the syndicate's ruler, and those few dark creatures who carry it do so at her bidding. This is not a request. The debt is still owed by you, the Obsidian, the Green, and the Red," he says quietly. "Now, I assume a man with your reputation, with your history, is prone to vendettas. I warn you against thinking of this as an onus set upon your shoulders, and instead counsel you to look at it as the greatest opportunity of your lifetime." He points out the window with his cane. "You have a chance to become more than a thief. With the syndicate, you can ascend, you can rule. Serve me well, and this world can become your playground." His silken words are lost on me. I don't want to ascend. Could give a shit about their games or their ridiculous delusions of grandeur. They're just another gang with better-than-average organization and accounting. Sooner or later, they'll all eat themselves. But even though I might stand on a ledge and think about jumping, that doesn't mean I want to get bone-sawed to death. That's what will happen if I say no. Or he'll go for my team first, and I'll hear the screams all over again. I think of Volga standing there in the rain looking like a lost puppy. "I'll do it," I mutter. "Now, what's the prize?" The Duke of Hands laughs merrily. "Glad you asked. My darling, we're stealing the most valuable thing in all the world.